When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by my psychic and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Good evening, Windy.
And our tactics guy and meme creator extraordinaire, Nathan A. Clark, will be joining us a bit later. So, little look behind the curtain. I'm recording with Bardi now, and then I'm going to record with Nathan after the Bayern game. So, to you, it will seem like a seamless piece of work, but actually, Bardi and I, we're talking on Monday night, post-Southampton, and everything's fine again, right, Bardi?
Yeah, and I don't think I don't realise why you split Nathan and up. Because we had a good old bonding session at the football on Saturday, you're worried that he might become my new best friend.
I thought you would notice that, but yeah, you know I'm a schemer, so you've seen straight through me.
Yeah.
What did you make of the game?
It looked like it was going to be a pretty run-of-the-mill game, that we were going to turn up, play fine football, play maybe not perhaps the greatest game, but win the match and then kind of move on from Colchester. But as we know, the game took a dramatic twist. And ultimately, I think I said afterwards when I was talking to people at the stadium, I think ultimately perhaps it was the best thing that could happen to Spurs. Not just because now Aurier is suspended for a match, but we have a team that has kind of, it was forced to work together to win this game. So whatever the truth is behind rumours about splits and not being a unit and anything like that, to win this match, we had to have a team that came together and come through that adversity. And they did. And had we lost the game, I think it's one of those, it's like a split in the road. Had we lost that game, it really would have been curtains for us. But we won it. We came through it. And it's got, I think that will serve us great in the long run.
I actually completely agree with that summary. It's really weird that a sending off could actually do us a favour. Being down to 10 men just completely focused the minds of the players, and it meant that they could play a solid game without trying to attack too much and just focus on getting the job done and getting over the line. And it seemed that actually did help us out in the end. We'll talk a little bit about the sending off.
I just want to talk about the kind of the galvanising of the team, because sure. I haven't referenced Italy or Italian football in a while.
Here we go.
And I should, but the last two times, for example, that Italy have won the World Cup, it's come through adversity. Either they've completely been destroyed by the press, they've had a terrible time, and they've right, that's it, we're not going to talk to the press anymore. We are the team and this is us. Or half their team have been done for Calciopoli and they're going to go to prison. And the only way they can come back home and not go to prison is by winning the World Cup. So in the same kind of way that Mourinho would sometimes engineer it so it was us versus the rest of the world, that sending off, everything else, everyone's talking about us, that did kind of naturally galvanise us that way.
So it's interesting because, you know, just last week we spoke in some detail about whether this might be the end of the road for Pochettino. And I think we were all sort of saying, not yet, not yet. But really, one game has completely changed the feeling in the fan base. And everyone seems back on side with Pochettino. Isn't football just a fickle beast?
Of course, we said if we win our next three games, then it's all forgotten. The crisis is gone.
And after recording our podcast, he had his press conference and he basically said all of the right things that you've wanted to hear for weeks. And I was left thinking, why haven't you been saying this in every other press conference? Why have you been throwing players under the bus? Why have you been making out there all these rifts when actually you could have just said this all along and kind of brought us all together and we'd have gone along on the journey with you and given you a bit of bit more leeway? But he's a strange one. There's definitely something up with Pochettino at the moment. But, you know, you've got to tune out the players this week. Let's talk about the game in kind of more specific terms. So for me, I thought we started fine. Like you said, there wasn't anything to write home about, but we were playing some reasonably good football. And before we had Aurier sent off, the man that stood out to me was the first goal scorer, Tongai Ndombele. I thought he looked really good. So Southampton were very organised and they were difficult to break down. And every time we got forward and progressed the ball, it was through an Ndombele flick. It was through something he'd done to create space or to get the ball beyond their midfield. And that really impressed me. I kind of knew, he was a good player. But he's a lot more skillful than I think I realised. Did you notice that from watching in the ground?
Yeah, definitely. He was breaking the press a lot. As you said, they were compact. He was taking the ball and going through their lines, opening the game up. The referee who had a terrible match, I thought he could have booked two or three Southampton players in that first half an hour period who were tactically fouling Ndombele. And the fact that he booked Aurier so quickly was totally against how he'd been managing the game. He'd been almost like he'd been too relaxed. And then all of a sudden he decided, no, that's it. I'm going to stop all these petty fouls now. Yeah, he was great. And he missed an opportunity. Well, he didn't miss it. Back on the highlights, it was deflected over. But he had a very similar opportunity to the goal he scored where he was just arriving at the edge of the box. And of course, it's too early to properly compare him to Dembele, but he's already got two league goals to his name, which is, I'm going to take a rough guess, perhaps nearly what Dembele got in all his years, I suppose. Maybe he got four, if that.
Yeah, and I think from everything I've read, this is an extraordinary scoring rate for Ndombele, which he won't keep up. But the signs are good that he's getting into he's arriving in the box at the right time. Mm. And I guess that's one thing you could say about the formation we played. So we played the diamond-ish again. We started in that way, at least. And that gives Ndombele a bit of freedom to get forward because he knows that Winks is holding behind him. So perhaps there's an argument that if we maintain that formation, then it allows him to showcase some of his skills in the opposition box. But he looked really good. And then he scored the opening goal and it was a good finish. It took a nick, so it kind of made Angus Gunn look foolish, but actually it was a lot harder than it looked in real time. And then the sending off happened. So Aurier's first challenge was, I mean, ridiculous, because the guy was going nowhere and he just scissored him and picked up an obvious yellow. The second one proved slightly controversial amongst people, though. What did you make of it?
The first one in the stadium where I sat, I thought it was definitely a foul. I thought the referee had gone a bit early in his yellow card. As I said, he hadn't booked anybody up to that point. And I think we ended the game without a Southampton player being booked. So I thought he was a bit harsh to the first kind of Spurs foul he booked. But I've seen the replay and it is a booking. But the problem is, in the context of the game, it wasn't. Which is why I get annoyed by referees. That if you're letting stuff consistently go, why? Or what makes you decide, right now, guys, I'm just going to start booking everything. But it was a yellow card in a normal football match. And the second yellow was soft. But Aurier, Winks, they're all a little bit at fault for this. Aurier was caught out of position. Winks was caught arguing with the linesman. And he made a decision which was wrong and Bertrand took full advantage of it.
Yeah, I think you've summed it up in saying that he was making up for his own mistake in trying to pull Bertrand back by the shorts. And I feel like these days, if you can be seen to pull a shirt or pull shorts, you're going to get a yellow card, almost regardless of where it happens on the pitch now. And that, it's one of those things that it is soft, you're right. and it probably isn't enough to bring a player down. But when a player feels a tug, they're going to go to ground, particularly when they're up against a player who's just been booked. So it was incredibly foolish from Aurier. And he misses the game now, which means that someone else has got a chance to stake a claim for that right back berth. So foolish in more ways than one. But the sending off really changed our style, and it had an immediate change to our formation. So Sissoko went out to right back. How did you feel when that happened? Were you nervous for him?
It's the experiment we've all been waiting for. we've all been waiting to see what he can do there. And no, he can't play right back. He did fine in a very Sissoko kind of way there. He worked hard, he tackled well. Nobody got the beating of him, but positionally, the first half I sit in the corner of the south, and the right back is right underneath me, and you could see he was getting dragged inside and he was out of position, and he's not used to that role. Perhaps he could be made into one, but he's definitely not a starting right back right now.
So I think that's true, that he would definitely need some sheen, some polish, if he were to make that position his own. And Alderweireld's given quite an interesting interview saying that he thought Sissoko did really well, but they kind of coached him through the game, which is great. It's exactly what you want. You want your kind of experienced centre-backs to be talking to a guy who's filling in there. I mean, the thing I liked about Sissoko was he was very conservative. People have kind of spoken up about him playing at right back because he could make these kind of lung-busting runs forward, but actually he kind of played within himself, and I like that. I like the fact that he was cautious. He tucked inside next to his centre-back and he didn't do too much. He just said, beat me, and they couldn't beat him more often.
Yeah, and I think Sissoko, last week where you were worried about when he got booked that he might have got sent off, but I have faith in Sissoko. He may be a terrible finisher and his passing may be all over the place, but he's a very, very smart footballer who understands his roles. So I was never concerned about him. If he's got someone guiding him and helping him through, he was going to be fine. Had Sissoko been booked after 30 minutes, I wouldn't have had a concern about him doing an Aurier. He would just simply wouldn't have done that. He would have allowed the player to have gone and tried to catch him up. And that's the difference between Sissoko and Aurier. Sissoko's smart. Aurier, he's not.
No, I agree. He's a hothead at best.
Yeah, yes.
And he's a very unintelligent footballer at worst. So it seemed to be going okay. And then ball gets played back to Hugo Lloris. He tries to do a Cruyff turn, but he forgets to take the ball, and it was pretty ugly.
Do you know, I didn't even see it. I was in the ground, and I didn't see it go in, because the ball had gone back to Lloris, and immediately my eyes went up the pitch, and I went to look, where's Kane, where's Son, who's he going to clear it to, what kind, you know, when he chips it out wide, what the wide pass is going to be. And then all of a sudden, because you just judge, it goes back to the goalkeeper, and I should have known better, but it's going to be safe. And then you realise the ball hasn't gone out of his feet yet. And then you kind of start looking down, and you're like, oh my God. And then history. You've seen that's a momentous, that's going down in the halls of fame, man. And then sometimes you've got to realise that you've just witnessed a bit of football in history. And that's what we all saw. And it was a strange feeling. The South Stand just kind of just went really eerily quiet. And he didn't look at us. He couldn't look at us. And at the end of the game, he came over and he said sorry to the South Stand, which, you know, he didn't have to do, but he did. And everybody cheered his name, gave him a good ovation, a good reception. But 17,000 people just kind of going, you absolute dick. It was, I felt sorry for him.
Did he get a bit of abuse?
There was a few shouts and stuff, but Lloris, had it been Trippier, it would have been a different story. Lloris has got he's got a lot of points in our book, you know.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of love. Kane, there's certain players who can survive those moments, and he did just about. And then he actually played pretty well. He'd started well, and he finished up playing pretty well. So
I would say he played better than pretty well. I thought he was outstanding, and had he not made that error, he would have been our man of the match. I mean, he made two really, really good saves. The one from Yoshida was... That's the kind of save that I don't think many goalkeepers could make. But it was his general handling and his kind of assuredness after that. Weirdly, it focused his mind. That mistake made him concentrate, because he was like, I'm not making another one. That's the last mistake I make today. We've seen him do silly things with the ball at his feet before, but not that close into goal. That was just absolutely crazy decision making. That ball's just got to go. And Pochettino said after the game, blame me. Don't blame Hugo, blame me, because I tell him to play that way. But surely he wouldn't want him to take those kind of risks. That's next level.
Yeah, the whole, because when I came back home and watched the whole kind of, the whole back four, just, we looked a little bit shaken. I don't know exactly how many minutes after the sending off it was, but the whole back four just seemed a little bit nervy. And perhaps it wasn't the time to be trying something like that. It could have just gone long. But then when you're up against 11 men and you've got a long game coming, you don't want to be just needlessly booting the ball forward. The whole point is you've got to try and kill the game, keep the ball. And I could see the logic behind it. And of course, that's how I want Tottenham to play, but perhaps not doing a Cruyff turn there. But
yeah,
but there's plenty of examples of good goalkeepers making mistakes. And we've actually, tomorrow, we've actually got Neuer versus Lloris. So we could have proper fireworks.
And it's the difficult, most difficult position on the pitch, the goalkeeper. There's nowhere to hide. All eyes are on you. If you make a mistake, that's it. It costs a goal. It's seriously high pressure. And he normally copes with it pretty well. He does make some bloopers, for sure. But on the whole, he saves more than he lets in. And he adds so much value to our team. So I can't stay mad at Hugo. And then just before half-time, Harry Kane gets us in the lead again. And he really looked like he was on a one-man mission to win us that game. He looks so determined to win it for us.
Yeah, he looked great. And I don't even know if they showed him much of the day, his attempt from the halfway line.
Oh, that was glorious, yeah.
It was from far away. And no, he had a great game. I haven't seen him play that well, be that mobile, that strong, and that determined for a while. He was taking players on, going down the left, cutting inside. His finish wasn't the cleanest Harry Kane finish, but it was a part of a beautiful attacking goal.
And excuse me while I stick to an agenda.
Go on.
But I really think it's because he was playing up by himself. I've just got this thing. I don't like it when he's got a partner. I prefer him leading the line alone. And I think that's kind of why we saw him put in that shift in the second half where he was magnificent. He really did. It's kind of like, I'm your focal point. I'm the one that has to do all this stuff. I don't need your help. You do your freely bits around the edge and just get me the ball in the box. But like you say, he was making those runs down the left, which we've not really seen a lot of this season. And that's Kane at his best, pulling out wide left, isolating a defender, beating him with some quick feet in the box and then getting a shot in. And it's lovely to see. There was one occasion actually where he had a really good opportunity to get a shot away and he chose to try and pass and he kind of messed it up. And that was slightly surprising. But at the same time, he's not perfect. And no player's decision-making is going to be perfect every time. But he looks so good. And the goal was a lovely finish from Kane. He looked full of confidence when he took that.
Yeah, and Son and Eriksen on the counter. It was kind of like harking back to like the Real Madrid days at Wembley, where the three of them just... Eriksen's not the quickest player, but he's so smart with the ball. And it was a great goal. And Eriksen, he had a mixed game. You know, he put a shift in, he worked hard, he did some decent things with the ball, but then he also did some terrible things with the ball. And I can see why there was a bit of a controversy on Twitter about whether or not he played well and whether or not he had a great game.
He's definitely been taking a lot of stick this week, Eriksen, and
rightfully so, for some of the things he did was schoolboy errors.
I mean, to me, he just looks completely shot of confidence at the moment. And I don't know if it's to do with not getting his move to Real Madrid. I know it's finding out that actually no one wants you must be quite a hard thing to take. You know, he probably has a slightly higher opinion of himself than other clubs do. So maybe that has got to him. But something's not quite right there. But he, as ever, he ran the most in our team by a considerable margin. And, you know, he's not going to put himself into too many 50-50s. I'm not going to say he bottles them, because I don't think that's a fair phrase, but he's not one to throw himself into full-blooded challenges. But what he does do is close players down and force them into areas of the pitch where they can't hurt you. And I thought he did a really good job of doing that, actually, when he kind of tucked in on the right-hand side and was helping out Sissoko quite often. And he was fine, you know? He was absolutely fine. And what he did, the bit of interplay with Son for the goal was great. And I think, you know, in-form Eriksen probably doesn't get credit for that, because you just expect it and it's the norm. But when he's in this kind of form where he's really struggling, let's look at that and say, actually, that is something that deserves some credit and deserves some positive thought. So I was pleased to see him involved in the goal, and I was pleased to see him help shut out Southampton defensively as well. The other player that stood out was Harry Winks. What did you make of his performance?
No, Winks was good. He's been on a bit of a run at the moment where he's had a lot of lot of good performances. He was good. His passing was pretty decent. He got around. Yeah, I can't complain about Winks. He's been on a decent run of form.
He seemed to me to kind of take on a bit of a Scott Parker role, in that he was a bit of kind of blood and thunder. It wasn't his usual one and two touch passing and kind of getting moves started. It was more chasing things down and stopping the opposition hurting us. And we really kept Southampton at arm's length. It was a great team effort to keep them at arm's length. And given that we were down to 10 men for best part of an hour, their XG was 1.16. So a very respectable defensive performance from us. I was quite impressed by that.
I mean, it was a corner and a free kick, that, and then they had a couple of half dangerous crosses, and that was it really. I want to give a quick shout out to Lamella, who I thought was really good when he came on.
He was.
I perhaps would have taken off Eriksen for Lamella and kept Suns counter attacking, because I think once that change was made, I did think we lost the kind of fear factor. But then Sun was being a bit reckless in defence. So I totally understand Pochettino's movement. But Lamella was his usual self. And there was one moment where he went through the Southampton player and then went actually through Danny Rose as well. He was just taking man, ball, and another man.
That was great, yeah. I mean, I've been quite critical of Pochettino's use of substitutes recently, but I thought he got them pretty much bang on in this one. And the men are coming on 65 minutes is pretty early for Poch. He normally leaves it until 70, 75 before he makes his first change. But that was good timing. It worked out well. He then brought on Dyer as well, who also, I thought, looked pretty steady in midfield. That was good to see. We kind of need Dyer to get back up to speed quickly. Thumbs up from me for the substitutions this week, for sure.
Yeah, but you did see him trolling you by bringing on Wanyama as well with 20 seconds to go.
Yeah. Was that just for the ovation or just to kind of wind the clock down a bit, I guess?
I think it was just to show us he can do what he wants.
Yeah.
it was a definite power play by Pochettino.
Sweet. Okay, well, that is that's Southampton done. The next bit you're going to hear is post Bayern Munich.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Okay, Nathan, I wasn't expecting us to be talking under these circumstances. I'm going to give you the option. Do you want to carry on recording right now?
Not really, but I think, like, I guess there's still, like, I don't want to do a normal episode. I don't want to break the game down. I don't want to talk about individual players or the tactical approach of the game, because I don't think any of that really matters right now.
Yeah, and also, it's too fresh at the moment, isn't it? You need to sort of take a step back. Yeah. And analyse in the cold light of day. My blood is still, like, boiling at the moment. I don't think I've ever seen Spurs surrender quite like that. How do you feel about Pochettino now, given what you said in our last episode?
I'm still holding in there. I know that I've now been saying this a while, but I really believe that if we just hold in there a little while longer, that there are resolutions to the current problems. And Bayern are a really good team. You face them at a time when you're going through hardship in the club, and they can punish you like that. And yeah, they didn't create such great chances as the scoreline reflects, but they still dramatically outplayed us. You said, like, you don't think you've seen us, what was your wording? You haven't seen us collapse?
Surrender.
We've seen it a couple of times. We saw it against Newcastle, but I guess we haven't really seen it at the beginning of the season.
At home.
At home, at the beginning of the season, when there are, reason still to fight for. Like, it's not, and we're not exhausted or anything like that. Yeah,
And also, it came after such a promising display. Yeah. We kind of got a good feeling back. We dug in that second half against Southampton. Back to the wall display. We showed that we could defend as a unit. They worked hard for each other as a team. Every man did their job magnificently. And then we sort of see the polar opposite in the second half tonight.
It's weird. It's been like that. It's been like, it's very easy to look at results and say, oh God, no one cares and everyone's given up. But like, that's not been the case. It's been this like this bipolar emotional tantrum where we're extremely up and we're extremely down. I don't mean to use that phrase offensively. I apologise if anyone is uncomfortable with the analogy I'm making there. But, you know, yeah, like you said, we've seen that Southampton performance where the players have really dug in against hardship. And then we've seen this opposite where everything collapses. So I don't think it's as simple as saying that, like, we don't care or it's over or people have given up. It's we're trapped in this really weird headspace and these weird performances. I don't think that's the same as this being the end.
Yeah, I agree. It's very situational. And there were, I mean, you know, I'm saying it's a big surrender. There were some mitigating factors in the second half. And let's not go into them now because I can't face going over it. But there were things that happened. And, you know, but some of those finishes were ridiculous and wouldn't happen all at the same time again. So there is that as well. But you're right, they totally outplayed us and our defending was utterly appalling. And there seemed to be a real lack of heart, which is the thing that upsets me the most and puts the fear of God into me the most. Because on that showing, I think it's really hard to argue against...
Say it.
Poch not being able to motivate the team anymore. I do. I think it's that kind of lost the dressing room cliche. I really feel that he has now.
I don't agree. I don't think we're unmotivated. I think if anything, there's like we're too emotionally invested. Like we, you know, like the draw at Stamford Bridge, the battle at the bridge, and yeah, again Newcastle. Again, it's not that like we've given up or we don't care. It's we care too much, and when things start to go wrong, we're having this highly emotional reaction that's having such a negative. It's not like they're not trying. In patches, they're not trying, but that's as an emotional reaction to hardship rather than like a disinterest from the start. I think it's possible to turn this around. I wrote an article last night and earlier today that like is just like, right, start again. Oh, God.
And Bardi and I, in the first half of this podcast, were really quite upbeat and chipper about things and feeling like everything was okay. And the thing is, of course, you shouldn't just jump to conclusions after one match. The problem is it isn't one match, is it? It's the best part of 2019 where, like you say, we've been so up and down, so inconsistent, so unpredictable. We've had the highs of the Champions League where we've been excited and captivated and emotionally invested. And then we've had the lows of some of the Premier League matches where we've just looked abject, absolutely abject. And like we're struggling to find motivation to overcome teams that we should be thrashing. And I don't know. I'm very concerned now, I must say. I wouldn't be surprised if he's not got long left in his job.
I wouldn't be surprised, but I would certainly be incredibly disappointed. I do think that we should stick it out. I do think that the alternative options out there are certainly long-term in theory, even if a sudden change gives us some kind of boost. Did you preview this game in the first half?
Not really, no.
Okay. Do you think before this game you might have said that it's a freebie?
I probably would have done, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I thought we'd probably lose 2-1 or 3-1.
Yeah.
I'd have been fine with that.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah, that's fair. And then when it gets ridiculous, you can't hold... Yeah, we can't really hold on to that sort of idea anymore of just letting this one slip. But
I mean, I don't know. It's the decision making just went. Yeah, they weren't talking to one another, not communicating. There's and that implies a lack of leadership to me. Because if you're a well led unit, you communicate well. Communication is so important in football, and our players were ranting and raving at each other, not talking each other through the game tonight, and that's not good. Should we just stop there? Because we could just go in the downward spiral here, couldn't we?
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
Let's come back stronger and hopefully be talking about some more positive results.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindner for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and SoundCloud D Lindner. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Sometimes the transition to fall and winter feels like experiencing every season on the same day. The shoes in the Allbirds Mizzle collection were made for misty morning walks, surprise snow days, and anything a trip to the dog park might bring. The whole collection brings together water-repellent technology and classic style, so you can stay warm, dry, and comfy during your everyday adventures. Check off your errands with the Wool Runner Mizzle. Dash through cold and wet weather with the Wool Dasher Mizzle. Or upgrade to next-level protection with the Wool Runner-Up Mizzle Plus. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with your purchase. allbirds.com, code FRESHSOCKS.